You are Locked On Raptors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hey, how's it going? Welcome to episode number 419 of Locked On Raptors for Monday. This will be Monday, I guess. Monday, November 19th. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. Find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And, of course, as always, make sure you're checking out the Locked On Podcast Network with team-focused shows for all 30 NBA teams. We got Locked On Fantasy with Josh Lloyd, Locked On NBA with a whole bunch of hosts from across the network, including David Locke, and we've got weekly contributions from Ben Golliver and Sam Amick as well over on Locked On NBA, so make sure you're finding that show. And also the NFL side of things. Today was, a week of football, I guess. I don't know. I didn't watch any today. My fantasy team's not doing so hot. I know that's true, but if you are a fantasy football player, if you're just a fan of an NFL team, check out the Locked On NFL Network as well. We've got Locked On Fantasy. I think two Locked On Fantasy shows going on over there. We've got all the team focus shows too. So make sure you are finding the show that you like. And if you find one you like and find a host that you want to support, the best way to do that is to go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all the places you get your podcasts, and subscribe, rate, and review. It's very helpful. 5 stars, as always, is deeply, deeply appreciated. And we're doing really well with the ratings and reviews on Locked On Raptors, and I'd like to keep that up. So thanks to everyone who's taken the time to do it before. And if you haven't, please get on that, and I will be forever indebted to you. Also, you can check out my Patreon page. You can go to patreon.com/SeanWoodleyRaptors for premium podcasts. We got 4 episodes up now. Missed last week because I was insanely busy, but this week we're going to have 2 podcasts coming up, including on Wednesday, myself and Blake Murphy. You know Blake. We're going to be doing a deep dive into Jose Calderon job battles. So if that's something you want to hear, you will only be able to hear that if you are a $5 or more subscriber to the Patreon page. So please get on that if you want to hear that. And thank you very much for anyone who has considered it or taken the leap and given me some money. It really, really helps me out and makes me able to do more stuff that I like to do instead of stuff that I don't like to do. So that's my self-promotion. Today's show begins now. And I'm joined by our pal, Vivek Jacob. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Just hanging out on this Sunday, as I know this is going out on Monday, but
it's probably going out on Sunday, really, but no one's going to listen to it on a Sunday. Come on, who's listening to a podcast Sunday night? That's not a podcasting hour. This is a Monday morning content for your morning commute.
All right. So let's give the people what they want then.
Yeah. So the Raptors played 2 games over the weekend. I figured it'd just be easier to talk about both of them in one podcast, even though they're very, very different in tone and tenor. Friday, they lost to the Boston Celtics in overtime, 123-116, and a bit of a bummer finish for what was a pretty good game. Boston Celtics, Toronto Raptors games, extremely good and entertaining, as it turns out. So we'll talk about that first, but we're also going to talk about the Raptors and Bulls as well. The Raptors shit-kicked the very terrible Bulls, 122-83, and we'll get to that in a sec. But let's start with the Boston game, and I'll give you my my basic general always go-to opening question for you, Vivek. What was your biggest takeaway from the Raptors' loss to Boston on Friday?
Biggest takeaway is that when Kyrie Irving gets going, there is nothing you can do.
God.
It doesn't matter who you throw at him. It doesn't matter how many bodies you show. He's going to find a way to slither through, kind of pirouette, do whatever he wants at the rim and finish left hand, right hand, off the glass, whatever. Yeah, he is so, so special when he has it going like that. And if that, but the thing I think about is if that's what it's going to take on their home floor with Pascal Siakam fouling out, with Danny Green fouling out, with, OG Anunoby leaving the game, with CJ Miles out, Norman Powell out, you got to like the Raptors' chances if health is equal.
That was a very Sean Woodley take right there. I appreciate the hell out of that. That was a very it's fine take. And that's a good point, though.
We're spending too much time together.
Apparently. It's a good point, though, man. Like, it was a very close game that required overtime, and I guess the Raptors just kind of ran out of dudes in overtime. I guess that's kind of mostly the problem. After Pascal fell out, they already were missing Danny Green. And then when you're out pretty much every single one of your wings except for Kawhi, that's going to be a problem. So not entirely surprising that they ended up having it slip away. My biggest take is that there should be ties in the NBA. This was such a fun game that I don't like. It kind of felt like it deserved a tie, and overtime was kind of a buzzkill. And I don't really remember anything from the overtime. And that's, I think, my prevailing takeaway with most things is I don't remember much from most overtimes. So Give me ties in the NBA. Maybe that makes me disgusting, but there have been a lot of ties in the NFL this year, and they've been super fun, and I enjoy them. I miss the NHL having ties back in the day. I don't know. Am I weird for wanting ties?
I think it's kind of weird.
Okay.
I just think of, you know, Kawhi missing that shot at the end, and then he just, let's call it a game and shake hands. I don't know. I feel like it would be a weird thing to move to. So I'm okay with the overtimes. It's only another 5 minutes, and I always like free basketball, especially if you pay a ticket to be at the game. There's nothing like free basketball. So
I guess. I just remember when Kyle Lowry hit that half-court shot against the Heat, and then it went to overtime, and overtime happened, and no one knows what happened because the shot was so awesome, and the Raptors ended up losing. I know it's a playoff game, but why not have ties
and
play
it? You can't end a playoff game in a tie, Sean.
Why not? Just play another one. Just go eight. It's fine.
No, no. With that series, no.
Oh, yeah, eight games of that series. That, that's cruel and unusual punishment for everybody. Yeah. But yeah, Kyrie Irving, he's extremely good. I still think both playing at their peak, it's still a very real conversation, Kyle Lowry or Kyrie Irving. Obviously, Kyrie has an insanely high ceiling that Kyle just can't reach offensively, but all the other stuff that Kyle does, I kind of prefer to what Kyrie offers in the similar sort of skill. So, like, this was a conversation, I think actually Raptors HQ had a post the day of the game where it was like comparing the two depth charts, and they said that Kyle Lowry was an advantage over Kyrie Irving. I don't know if I'd say it's an advantage per se, but I think coming into the season there was definitely this whole like, oh, Kyle is, you know, way behind the Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Jason Tatum sort of triumvirate. Maybe he's closer to, you know, Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown than he is to being the second best player in the series. I don't totally buy that, although maybe with Kyle not playing super well the last little while, and in the Celtics game he was 3 of 12, so maybe it's not the best time to compare them. But still, I think the way Kyrie and Kyle match up is always fascinating. They've always been a very interesting and sort of back-and-forth type of matchup, and I think both guys have had big games against each other, so I wouldn't be too discouraged by this if you're like a Raptors fan looking and trying to like stack up the two teams with each other, because down night for Kyle, but Kyrie also had one of those nights. It reminded me of the game, I think it might have been Game 4 of the 2016 Eastern Conference Finals, Raptors-Cavs, mm-hmm. when the Cavs hit like 11 straight shots in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that was Kyrie doing stuff. And I remember talking to Corey Joseph after the game and just like asking him what it's like to have to guard Kyrie when he's that hot. And he just, like, shook his head and was like, I don't even know, man. I felt like I was doing a really good job, and it just didn't matter. And, like, that's the kind of thing that Kyrie's capable of that I don't think Kyle is. But, yeah, not the best night from some of the other Celtics, including Jaylen Brown, who is bad now. And it's good for the Raptors, if you're looking at this matchup, for Jaylen Brown to suck. He's shooting, like, 18% on wide-open threes this season. That's nice, yeah, if you're a Raptors fan. Not nice if you're a Celtics fan, I suppose, or a Jaylen Brown investor. But I guess the big thing about this game, the big sort of confrontation point afterwards, aside from like a couple fouls here and there, which I don't care to talk about, but the last play of regulation, we've already kind of touched on it, the Raptors had the last shot. Kawhi Leonard missed the shot. He isolated, I think, Marcus Morris, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and missed the shot. And after the game, Nick Nurse addressed this. He was asked about it by Eric Kareen. And I'm just going to play his response here, and we can talk about it. So here it is.
Well, in that scenario, with the shot clock, you know, it's going to be the last shot of the game. The main thing is you're just going to, you know, we're going to hold it for the very last shot, right, so that nothing bad happens and they can get a rebound and call it a timeout and advance it, et cetera. And it's just, you know, it's just man on man, and you hope your guy can make the basket, and we have a lot of faith in him that he can.
So what was your response? There was kind of some, I think, negative backlash to this quote from Nurse on Friday night, but just sort of the lack of, I guess, imagination, I suppose, when it came to drawing up this play. There were, I think, like 24.3 seconds or something on the clock. There was, obviously, you wanted to hold it for the last shot. I don't think anyone's disputing that, but the way he just said, hey, it's man on man, and you hope he can score, kind of Casey-ish a little bit, and if there was a thing that everyone really pointed to in terms of Nursa, that's going to be entirely different than Casey, that you could sort of tell from the jump, it was that he was going to be more he was going to experiment more and try some new stuff and maybe not get stuck in some of the sort of go-to cliche moves at the end of games. What was your response to Nurse's explanation of why they just ISO'd Kawhi on Marcus Morris to close the game?
I was fine with it. I thought it was just an honest explanation. Basketball is a game of trade-offs, and if you look to run plays and you do take on the risk of turning the ball over and setting up easy transition opportunities for the opposition, and the last thing you want to do is give up something like that on the last possession of the game. Kawhi Leonard is someone who, in isolation, should have an advantage over most players. You look at the shot that he got, it was a pretty clean look. It seemed like he had good balance on the shot, just missed it. Is that something he'll make as the season goes along? Is that something that he will maybe just get that step on Marcus Morris and take all the way to the rack? Maybe. So I think there is an element of Kawhi still coming back and those things looking a lot better. And frankly, we saw, in that second game of the season where the Raptors went to Kawhi in the post, and because he made so many of those, it didn't even have to come down to the last shot. The Raptors just buried the game. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of things that happened before that put it down to that last shot, so it's easy to magnify that. Now, if you want to really get into the isolation, if you maybe want to criticize one thing, it was perhaps the lack of action that was happening outside of that could maybe, just create something, create an angle for a pass or an easier shot for someone else. Mm-hmm. You look at the way that developed, Kyle Lowry literally just walked all the way to the corner, right? So you want to see more aggressiveness from the other guys, just keeping those Celtics defenders engaged, because I do think it is a problem in isolation when you allow the opposition's defenders to just hone in on one guy. Mm-hmm. If you have those actions happening away from the ball, then I think it makes things a lot easier. Now, that might just also be a comfort thing, right? These guys getting used to playing with each other, and maybe Kawhi just saying, hey, no, this is the matchup I want. Like, I don't want to run the risk of having actions outside of the play that might allow the Celtics to switch. So that's another thing to consider. But overall, I'm not too concerned with giving Kawhi the ball in the last seconds of the game. Frankly, the more often that happens and the more often he makes them, those are signature moments that are going to make it harder for him to leave. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for that part of it. If there is another aspect to this, it's the stuff you brought up about Kyrie versus Kyle. Mm-hmm. And so just the lack of shot creation when Kyle doesn't have the three ball going. That is something that I think is a concern. When you look at, obviously, we've talked about the hierarchy being established with Kawhi and Kyle, and then you go down the line from there. Most nights this season so far, it's been Serge. Siakam's obviously come along. But if there is one thing that you want Kyle to do, and this was something that he did a great job of in the 15-16 season, where he was able to, get that step and then pull up, whether it was going to it was mostly going to his left. If he could get that little mid-range shot back, where he's able to create that separation and go up with that, that would be great. I also think he's become, I don't know if assist happy is the word, but there are times I've noticed more and more, maybe courtesy of this hot start with the assists and leading the league in that category, where he's getting to the rim and it seems like he has more of an eye for getting it out to the corner or getting it to a cutting guy when even, he got the layup right in front of him. So just being more of a scoring factor, I think, will make things easier for Kawhi and everyone else. So I think that aspect has to improve in the big games, where mm-hmm. he needs to recognize the value of his own scoring, which is something, goes back to even Jose Calderon. He never valued his shot enough. And Kyle, as the best, pretty much the best shooter on the team, has to value his scoring more.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since he has that, even, I know it's a three, we were talking about like non-three-point
Kyle. The fact that he's such a good pull-up guy around screens, like, he hasn't really had that all that much. A lot of his threes, I feel like, this season have been kind of within the flow of the offense in the half court, and then a lot of, you know, transition pull-ups and stuff like that. But, just sort of doing the Steph Curry, Dame Lillard thing, where he can kind of create his own shot and get it off in that little inch of space coming around a screen. Like, he hasn't done that a ton, and he can definitely go to that more. And, yeah, I do think there's probably a little bit of, like, the me playing NBA 2K and trying to break the Scott Skiles assist record in a single game with a guy type of syndrome coming in for him a little bit. Like, yeah, it's easy for him to get assists, so, like, why not to see how many he can get? And, you know, there's a nice element to that in which he's, like, involving everybody and everyone's getting their looks, and that's nice to see. But, yeah, sometimes I would not hate to see him go for a little bit more. Maybe he's just not at that point of his career anymore, right? Like, I still think he has the ability to get separation, and, you know, I think that little sort of step back to the left, we saw it a little bit early on, I guess, this season when he was kind of putting up bigger scoring numbers. It's kind of dipped a little bit lately as, I guess, his shooting has come back down to a human level, but I still think it's there, and his burst to sort of get to the rim was there in a way we didn't see it last year, and kind of against, say, the Wizards in the playoffs, for example, where he couldn't get by anybody, you know, whether it was a big guy switched onto him or not, he just, like, it felt like that was gone, and that at the start of the year seemed like it was back. Maybe not so much the last couple of games, but I don't really have huge issues with how Kyle's playing. I think maybe he's kind of taking a step back, and we'll talk about the Bulls game in a sec, but I think the way that he kind of, you know, just kind of let Fred and DeLon do more of the work, especially Fred since he started yesterday, like, I don't think that's a bad thing either, to try to get everyone involved. That's what Kyle does, man. Like, he's trying to get the whole team going at the same time, sometimes at the expense of himself. Just quickly to touch on the Nick Nurse thing as well, the statement there, like, I agree with you pretty much entirely. Like, I don't think there's all that much reason to be upset about it. It's like the best defense in the league, so you're at a heightened risk anyway of doing something where they're going to take advantage if you're trying to run some intricate stuff and have a lot of ball movement. Like, that's a team that can take advantage of that and turn you over and make it a bad thing that you're going to pay for at the other end. And also, just like in terms of the off-ball stuff, if there's one thing that maybe I was a little bit perturbed by, it's that, like, they didn't even try to get, you know, like the classic Lowry DeRozan pick and roll thing where you try to get a switch there and get the right guy on you. Like, that was kind of a bread and butter play for them, especially against teams like the Cavs with Kyrie Irving, right? Or I guess last year's Celtics too, where they would really try to take advantage of Kyrie, or Isaiah Thomas, I guess, in different Celtics iterations in the past. And maybe the Celtics would be more disciplined with trying to not have that switch. I don't really know how much we saw that at all in the game on Friday or either of the games so far this season, but might as well try to see if you can get that switch. And if not, hey, you still have Marcus Morris on Kawhi. So maybe that's something I would have liked to see. But in terms of, like, off-ball stuff, I mean, who are you trying to fool, really? I think everyone kind of knows what's coming there to begin with. And then the Celtics are the kind of team that's just going to switch everything anyway, right? You're not really going to confuse them, I don't think, with, like, a couple little screens off the ball on the weak side away from where Kawhi's isoing. So I think with where, considering the defense, like, if this is, like, the Bulls defense, fine. Run all the shit you want. Try to do something intricate. But against the Celtics, where it's just, like, a heightened risk with everything you do and every time the ball is not in the player's hands, then, you know, I'm very okay with what happened, and you live with it, and the overtime got away from them, that's fine. Ultimately, I don't think it's a terrible loss. I want to talk about that in just a second, though, but I want to first tell you about the Locked On Podcast Network social media feeds. Make sure you are checking out Locked On NBA Net and Locked On NFL Net on Twitter and Instagram. Really cool things are going on over there. If you follow the Twitter accounts, it's just pretty much every host on the network is getting retweeted by that account. So if you don't want to go around and follow 60 hosts from whatever the NFL or NBA networks, you can just subscribe or follow this account, and you'll get all of their stuff just retweeted into your feed. It's great during games, great when big stories are breaking, stuff like that. So make sure you're following Locked On NBA Net or Locked On NFL Net on Twitter. And then on Instagram, we're posting little snippets of the podcast. You can go listen to the bigger things by clicking on the link in the bio, and also a very good resource as well on Instagram, Locked On NBA Net and Locked On NFL Net on Twitter and Instagram. All right, so before we get to the Bulls game, which we don't need to spend too much time on because who cares, really, let's talk about some good stuff that came from the Raptors-Celtics game. For me, it was like the second quarter, I think there was like a 21-7 run after it seemed like things were kind of getting away. I believe it was like 44-33 at one point for Boston. Raptors called a timeout, and then the starters essentially went on one of their crazy defense, turned that defense into offense runs like we saw at the end of the game against the Celtics. What did you think of, like, is that going to become a lineup where, like, you're just going to be thrilled every time it's on the court? Like, the starters have been so goddamn good. And how do you think it plays, especially against the Celtics?
I think it plays out very well. I mean, I think that that was my biggest takeaway too. After the way they closed against the Pistons, after the way they were kind of passive against the Pelicans, you wanted to see the return of those defensive runs, and so we saw that against the Celtics. Until Kyrie got, you know, went into bonkers mode. I think this team matches up very well. You look at the things that they've set them up, set themselves up to do. It's to be able to switch. It's to be able to shoot a lot of threes. That's sort of the design of becoming a threat to the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, the Celtics do that as well. And again, we talk about this copycat league, and that's where these teams are at now. So I think in terms of the matchup, they're very similar in that sense. It's something that rebounding will be a very big factor, because obviously when you look to space the floor, when you look to be more athletic around the perimeter, you're going to have to sacrifice some size. And that's what the Raptors have done in starting Ibaka at center. So Siakam, if he can keep those rebounding numbers, get those rebounding numbers up, that'll make a big difference. And then just gang rebounding in general, right? I think there's still some standing around where, you know, you're chasing guys, or not just the standing around, it's the fact that, you know, you're chasing guys off the line, but you're ending up in the crowd, and now this guy can go get his own miss. So that's another thing that maybe they have to look at in terms of how they're contesting, being maybe a little more careful about the runouts off shots that are coming from above the break. So in terms of the matchup, those are things that I think both teams do. So I think when it comes down to it, if the Raptors are healthy and they have all their wings available, that's a big thing, to be able to throw size at Kyrie and just sort of compact the court in terms of his options with the wingspan. But again, that's something that the Celtics can do to Kyle Lowry as well by throwing size at him. So again, we're still both at, like, both teams are at incomplete stages right now. This was obviously a progression from that second game, but I think we're still quite a way away from seeing the best versions of either team. I mean, Gordon Hayward is still finding himself in the Celtics offense. Jaylen Brown, I don't know if you expect him to be this bad for forever. At some point, you might even have to consider bringing him off the bench and see how that goes. So yeah, we're still a long way from seeing the fully formed versions of this team. But obviously, based on the two games, it seems like these two, if they meet in the playoffs, it seems destined to go seven games, right?
Yeah, I think so. It seems like a really kind of evenly matched thing, but it does feel like the Raptors match up particularly well. And I guess it's just because, like, their roster is constructed as such that they just have, like, a million wings, which is what the Celtics also have. So it makes sense that they're kind of evenly matched. Just so we're getting to the point of the season where there's some lineup data that can be a little bit useful for, like, the most used lineups. The Raptors starters with Ibaka instead of JV are at 154 minutes played so far, 115.5 offensive rating, 95.1 defensive rating, rebounding percentage of 50.3, which I think you'll take considering the amount of shooting and offense you have on that in that lineup and the amount of defense. So, like, even if you're giving up the odd offensive board here and there and you're not, you know, completely winning the rebounding battle, you're forcing so many misses that I feel like you'll take that any day. The effective field goal percentage of opposing teams there is 57.8%, which isn't awesome. And let me just see here. Sorry, that's their own effective field goal percentage. I don't have the opponent numbers. I'm an idiot. Anyway, and against the Celtics, let me just pull this up here. Come on, NBA.com. Get your shit together. So 32 of those minutes have come against the Celtics for that lineup. 104.4 offensive rating, 72.1 defensive rating, and a 32.4 net. That is good. that's really fucking good. Yeah. I mean, the offense, I guess you'd expect that the offense would be a little bit depressed against the Celtics because the Celtics can't play offense themselves, but they sure can stop offenses. So that's encouraging for sure. That the fact that you have that lineup as your staple lineup and they're doing so well. And again, 32 minutes is not much, but we have seen, I think, their two best stretches in any game against the Celtics, the end of the first game and the second quarter of the second game, have both come with that lineup on the court. So that's interesting for sure. I wonder if we'll see... Are you surprised that we didn't see, like, Siakam maybe try to guard Kyrie for a little bit? Or was that too much? I mean, Nick Nurse talked after the game about, like, not busting out all the defensive stuff they have because why use it this early? Which I kind of subscribe to that idea, too, but... like, are you surprised they didn't try to do something to try to slow down Kyrie?
So again, foul trouble might have been a factor there.
Yeah.
I think in terms of Siakam, I just like him way better as a help defender, where he can wreak so much havoc off the ball.
Yeah.
So I just prefer that. But yeah, I definitely think it's a look that the Raptors can go to. Obviously, when Kyrie is going like that, you want to throw as many different options at him as possible, right? Like, that's what usually the best teams do. And, you know, you look at one of the few times that LeBron James was sort of confounded in his career is when Dallas threw just a bunch of different defenders at him, mm-hmm. you know, whether it was Jason Kidd or Sean Marion or...
J.J. Barea, baby!
Yeah, exactly. So... So maybe that's something that Nurse is saving. And so I think that's something, again, we have to wait and see. I don't think that's something, the type of thing that Nurse would rule out.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it's something that will be more than, you know, in case of emergency break glass situation.
I also think Siakam would probably have a little bit more trouble with Kyrie than, say, John Wall. Because John Wall is like... You kind of know what you're getting, right? He's going to drive straight and not do much in the way of nuance. Whereas Kyrie is a little bit more jitterbuggy, a little more sort of tricky to stay in front of, and his handle is just so much more refined and tricky. So it might not be quite the same thing. Not everyone is as much of a bum as John Wall is, because I guess is what I'm trying to say. Oh, man. Yeah. So I guess we can wrap it on the Celtics. Any other like parting shots before we wrap the Celtics game talk? It was fun. I know it sucked that it was like a third straight loss and that looks gross, but like in a vacuum, I think it was a game that ended probably how you would have expected going in, like a very close win for the Celtics at home. Like that doesn't shock me really.
Yeah, no, I think if anything, it just puts a little bit more pressure on the next two games, because ideally you do want to win the season series.
Yeah.
Just to make that statement. So you obviously now you got to win the next two. So
when do they play again? That's a good question.
It's a good question, Sean. Something that I was not prepared for.
I don't know. It's not really a good question. I wouldn't say a good question is something you can Google. I was just, I had not thought about this.
But if there is one thing that I have been thinking about with the Celtics and Philly's slow start and the Jazz as well, it's because of the way offense has shifted this season, mm-hmm. even more so than last season, it seems like it's become even more paramount to be an elite team that you have an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah.
And so I think maybe that's where the Celtics... maybe a bit lacking, where the Jazz maybe a bit lacking, where Philly, now we got to see what they look like with Jimmy Butler. So I feel like that may be part of their offensive drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but again, you know, you get to the playoffs, it comes down to having shot creation. And again, they will have that advantage because they've got so many guys that can create shots. Now, obviously, it's become a huge development in terms of the playoffs of having Siakam develop that spin move, of having Serge Ibaka being able to roll to the basket and finish the way he's finishing right now. So those are things that will matter. But yeah, that balance of shot creation in the playoffs versus right now seeing the value of just having an offensive juggernaut, I think that's going to be interesting to see how that transforms into the playoffs, because we've seen, you know, the referees change how they call things in the playoffs before. So this seems to be one of the rare times where they've already like seem to be continuing, you know, this freedom of movement beyond the first couple of games of the season. So if it goes in the playoffs, I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that idea that without a juggernaut of an offense, then having a really good defense only has so much value, right? Because, like, I think coming into the year, those teams you mentioned, the Sixers, Celtics, Raptors, Jazz, like, if you would have penciled those four teams into the top five in defense, I think most people would have said, yeah, that looks like it makes sense. And for the Raptors to be the only of those teams that really has a really potent offense right now, and I guess the Sixers could get there, but right now they're sitting 18th, and the Jazz are 20th, and the Celtics are 27th. My God. Maybe Brad Stevens, not the best coach in the world, huh? Huh? Learn offense first, bud. But yeah, no. I shouldn't call him bud. Bud actually knows how to coach offense. They're second. there's something to that idea that maybe the Raptors have differentiated themselves because their offense has remained excellent, and but they also have the defense to go with it. That's interesting theory to me. The fact that the Raptors are third in offense, like that's impressive considering that they're working in a new superstar. I guess it's not really that impressive considering they've been top five forever, and you add someone better, maybe that makes sense. But still, they're very good on offense. We're going to get to the Bulls game in just a sec, but first, is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right here. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with sponsors that they hear on their podcasts, so why not get in the podcast game? Our demographic is 98% male, with more education and earning than a traditional media audience. You can have your company sponsor this podcast right now. Email me at sean.woodley1@gmail.com, and we can get that process started for you. All right, let's get to the Bulls game. The Bulls make me so, so sad, man. Like, I know they were hurt and stuff, but like they just have not a whole lot in terms of NBA talent. They're like, Chris Boucher should have got run in this game because he does really well against G League opponents.
You're just looking at their guards without LaVine. It's a bad, bad situation. Mm-hmm. I was hoping to see more from Wendell Carter Jr., but it's tough on a rookie to be in that situation where he doesn't have guys to support him to really be effective.
Yeah.
So that was a little of a bummer. But yeah, just seemingly the overall lack of compete. Because you would think that if you're the Bulls, you're looking at that team coming in on your home floor, as depleted as they were on the wings, that it might give you at least a chance to compete. I mean, you look at what they did in the first half of their game against the Milwaukee Bucks. I guess that was completely obliterated by what Milwaukee did in the second half. They were just completely distraught, I guess. I don't really have words to describe what they did in the second half. Like, it was just really, really ugly and really, really bad. Like, I kind of just wanted the game to be called at a point.
Yeah, full disclosure, I didn't watch the fourth quarter, and I kind of only like skimmed through the first three because I was working last night during the game, and I had to watch it this morning, and only paid loose attention, looked up every once in a while when Matt Devlin yelled when Serge Ibaka dunked all over whoever it was he dunked all over. Was it Wendell Carter Jr.?
I thought it was Jabari.
That sounds like a Jabari thing, getting dunked on. I bet Serge wishes it was Robin Lopez, though.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which Bulls player makes you the saddest?
Which Bulls player makes me the saddest? I guess just thinking of Justin Holiday and the fact that he was on the Warriors at a time.
And has since played for the Hawks and the Bulls.
Yeah. So
yeah.
That's gotta be a sad, sad situation to be in.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I guess I can't be that sad for campaign because he is clearly not an NBA player but is getting NBA minutes and starting. Like, he might be worse than Lorenzo Brown. I don't think that's insane to say. Like, the fourth-string Raptors point guard might be better than their emergency starting point guard. That is pretty crazy. So I guess I'm not sad for him. Like, good on you, campaign, I suppose. Like, some you definitely have nudes of Gar packs, so... sorry. I just thought of something. So, Round Ball Rock, Very good podcast. Joey Devine has been on this podcast, as has Sean Keen hasn't, but listen to Roundball Rock. But this week they did an episode where they compared every NBA GM to a sex scene in a movie, like a famous sex scene. And the one that they had for Garpax, I'm not going to say it on the podcast because I want you to listen to this episode of Roundball Rock, and B, it's not the most savory of thoughts, so I'll tell Vivek after we're off air. But listen to Roundball Rock if you want to hear that comparison and much more. God, just a fantastic concept for a podcast. Anyway, so yeah, campaign doesn't make me that sad. I think it's Jabari Parker, man. Like,
just from where he was, second overall pick.
That and just like the off-season comments about him not being paid to play defense and yet still being the go-to guy or one of the go-to guys on what is the 28th best offense in the NBA. The fact that their defense is ranked higher than their offense is one of the more shocking things to me this season. Like, I thought the Bulls were going to be like competent on offense because all they had was one-way offensive players, and yet they're still so bad at offense that their defense still outpaces it. I just don't get it.
I guess we got to see how it plays out once Markkanen and Portis are back.
Yeah.
Chris Dunn, too, right?
So, yeah, that's true.
But when a bad team is missing all those guys, and obviously Zach LaVine for this game, I think it will play out the way you imagined, with the offense being at least maybe somewhat respectable.
Yeah.
I think this just might be an early season thing because of injuries.
Any opinions on what the Raptors players did in this one?
Opinions on what? I mean, it was nice to see Fred VanVleet find some rhythm.
Hell yeah, yeah.
So that was an encouraging thing. So hopefully he can carry that over into the games coming up. Outside of that, thought DeLon Wright looked fine. Serge Ibaka is still doing his thing. Kyle Lowry, safe finding your rhythm for games that matter.
Hopefully his ankle's good. I think his ankle's supposed to be fine. Nick Nurse said he doesn't think it's serious, so
yeah.
I guess so, that's Do you want to see Kyle rest a little bit?
Yeah.
I thought he was gonna rest for the Bulls game. I really did. I wrote in my preview for Raptors HQ, like I would have just rested everybody because holy shit, they could beat this Bulls team with nobody. Like just let Boucher and Lloyd go to work and they'd kill them. But like Lowry with the ankle thing, and then like there was on Wednesday against the Pistons, I don't know how many people caught this, but at the end of the game there, he kind of got knocked a little bit and was limping for a few possessions, and like it's just these little things, but like you don't want that stuff to build up and have him, you know, be just like slowly beaten down in a rubble over the course of the season, because like whenever he plays, he's going to play like Kyle Lowry. He's going to take charges in 30-point games, and like you're just not going to stop him from doing it. So honestly, there might not be a guy in the league you need to protect from himself more than Kyle Lowry. So I would not hate if like so the Raptors have back-to-backs in Orlando and Atlanta this week. If you rest Kyle for one and Kawhi for the other, I wouldn't hate that. I think that'd be a good idea. I don't know if we'll see it happen, but I wouldn't hate it.
I agree. Yeah, no, rest him. I mean, it's a back-to-back again, so let Kawhi play whichever one he wants to, and let Kyle rest for the other one. So, I definitely think it's important to get him his rest. We saw how effective that was, or how conducive that was to playoff success for him last year.
Yeah.
And we've seen it work to his detriment when he's been overworked in seasons before. So, as he ages, it should only become more of a priority, I feel. Obviously, there's been the aspect of Nick Nurse wanting to get Kawhi and Kyle on the same page as quickly as possible. There's the side that will tell you Fred VanVleet's been injured, DeLon Wright's been injured, so the opportunity hasn't really been there. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, hopefully if Fred starts to get going, if DeLon can keep his game up, then hopefully we'll see some rest for Kyle, and then hopefully at some point you get CJ and Norm back, and then there's even more reason to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Also, one last thing before we wrap things here. Pascal Siakam had 5 assists. He's an insanely good passer, which seems unfair considering how unguardable he is, although he went 4 of 10 last night, which is a garbage, completely ass night for him from the field by his standards. Brought his true shooting percentage all the way down to 67.4 with that. The assists with him, I think they're only going to continue. I like frothed at the mouth when Nurse made mention of the idea of playing him a point guard a little bit in that all bigs lineup, essentially, or all wings lineup.
Right.
The Pascal season is like my favorite thing so far this year. I don't think it's even close with the Raptors. Like, watching Pascal every night is just a delight. And 12-8-5 for him with a block and a steal. Like, that is... I said at the start of the year I thought he was going to become the Raptors' third best player by the end of the year. He might be that pretty convincingly right now, which is pretty wild. So, shouts to Pascal.
Shouts to Pascal.
I think that could do it. We've gone pretty long here. I'm going to get in trouble for this being this long. So, we can wrap it there. Vivek, do you have anything that you want to talk or promote or whatever that's coming up for you?
I'll have a feature on Danny Green coming out soon for Vice Sports. I will have a Kyle Lowry story coming out for The Athletic soon. Just looking at, you know, potentially a historic run to lead the league in assists after never really being close to doing it in right seasons on. Before.
Cool, man. I have Vivek and Jacob on Twitter. We'll probably have you on again later this week if it lines up, because we didn't have you last week for some reason, just the way schedules worked out and whatnot. So thank you for coming on. You can follow me at Woodley Sean. My alarm's going off. You can follow me at Woodley Sean. You can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, all the places you get your podcast to Locked On Raptors. And if you leave a rating or review, it would be very, very sweet of you, and I would appreciate you forever and ever and ever. I don't know what I'm going to have written this week. I'm going to have a couple premium podcasts on the Patreon feed, so make sure you're looking out for those. A mailbag podcast one day, and then that episode I talked about with Blake Murphy coming down the pipe as well later on this week. Oh, that's the other thing I need to promote. Next week, or 2 weeks, like 10 days from now, I suppose. Oh, 9 days, 8 days. I don't know. November 27th, whenever the hell that is, I will be hosting a live podcast from Odds Bar in Hamilton. It is right downtown, James Street South, 164 James Street South. And also, it's like right by the GO bus terminal if you want to come from out of town to come check it out. It's like a 10-step walk. You can get on the bus and off. There's an express bus that goes to Union if that's your bag, and I'd love to see you out. We're going to watch the game against the Grizzlies, do a little Q&A podcast beforehand. Might be a couple friends there. Kelsey O'Brien from Raptors HQ might come around. So, yeah, if you want to come do that in Hamilton, it's a good time. And Odds has delicious food. It's Novemberger right now in Hamilton, which is the best thing in the world, where all the restaurants have a burger contest, and I have eaten myself to death the last week or so with Novemberger's, and they have one at Odds too. So come on out. It'll be a good time. It's 164 James Street South next Tuesday, November 27th, for a live podcast at Odds the Bar. And that's going to do it. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time on Locked On Raptors.